Welcome to the Umpiring Fast Pitch Softball Podcast. I'm David.
And I'm Pete. And today we're going to continue with some Facebook and some group internet scenarios of things that have been happening in this new season.
Yeah. So the last one was fun. Ended up being probably close to 15 minutes talking about one particular play that happened. I have one that's similar that was presented to me. This one I didn't see on Facebook. Another umpire sent me this scenario, and I think it's worthwhile to talk through so that we can learn, you know, from our other umpires. They have to go through these things live and in person, and we have to...
We get the benefit of hindsight.
That's right. So Memorex or whatever, right? Is it live or is it Memorex? We're not sponsored by Memorex, by the way.
Although we can be.
Yeah, that's just
we'll reach out to us. We'll take any and all cash.
It's the Umpiring Fast Pitch Softball Podcast.com.
Diet Coke.
That's the one. Yeah, we'll do it all. So anyway, this one is similar where a runner is at second base and there's a hit to the outfield. Runner comes trucking at third. Third base coach is sending her home and she crosses home plate. So similar to our last scenario from last week. So if you haven't heard that one, you know, go back and listen to that one too. She crosses home plate and the third base coach says, "Hey, hey, hey, get back here. You missed third base." And so the runner goes back to third base. Let's gonna assume she touched. We are going to assume she touched home on the way back.
Okay.
So she touched home on the way back to third base, and she gets to third base and stops there. The ball's in the infield now, you know. And so the play is over, and the coach decides that he wants video replay to see if she actually missed third base. The umpires take it to video replay and come out and say that she did touch third.
The first time.
The first time through.
Uh-huh.
What do you do?
So I think this actually, almost, if you go back and listen to the other episode, thanks for listening next time. I think then, because by rule 622 that we talked about last time that says a runner has scored when they have touched first, second, and third legally and then touched home plate. So in that case, because they did touch, the run scored. And I think in that case, I think the right thing happened prior to that, where if she'd gone around first, second, by missing third, and then even touching home, it doesn't matter. The last base legally touched was second base. So the person, had they missed. And so in that case, the person just had a very big lead off of second. So in order to go back, we touch home, we go backwards, and then we touch third. And now we're safely back at third. And that would have been cool to do, in my opinion. But because review was called for, and review was granted, and review was reviewed, and the review said she touched, then I think the run scores, and we just put her on the bench instead of leaving her on the bag. That's the Pete Shear way.
Yeah. I can't disagree with you because we have 6-2-2 and a review that says that shows that she touched all of the bases, and including home plate, so the run scores. The problem that I have with this particular scenario is that the review was granted. And
right. And that's why I was real careful about it. Yeah. I was like, the review was asked for and the review was happened.
Yeah, exactly. So I truly believe that I believe two things. And so this is before we get in the book. I believe two things are important. I believe that
America is the greatest country.
That's number one. But we don't do politics here.
That's right.
So I don't know. Is that political that America is the greatest country in the world? So it's the greatest for me. I'm going to say that. And nobody can even argue that.
They can't.
So anyway, the first thing that I believe is that video review is a blessing and a curse. I think that there are times where video review is extremely helpful in making sure that we get the calls right for the girls, which is what we talk about that all the time. Our soapbox, I'm not going to get up on it right now, but that's what we're here for.
Yeah.
We are here to make sure that the girls have a fair contest and that we get it right for the girls. And when I say we get it right for the girls, I'm talking about the umpires, the arbiters of the game. So we have to get it right. In our example last week, again, assuming we really don't know this, we don't know if the plate umpire did or did not see her cross the plate, but let's assume he didn't, right? We assumed he didn't last week. We're going to assume he didn't. If somebody wasn't there to cover the play, if somebody wasn't there to see it, and there was something that impacted the game that needs to be decided, right? Somebody needs to judge that and say, did this work or not, you know? And there was nobody there. Well, we've got video review. We can go look at it now. And so we've got that. I think you called it a third set of eyes, right? We've got another set of eyes that can go look at it. So I think in that way, it's an absolute blessing. I also think, though, that it needs to have bookends, guardrails, right? You can't just leave it all open to say every time there's a play.
Yeah, and it is. The book does set those guardrails.
It does. So those are the two things that I believe. Mm-hmm. And so then, I was believing those things, I said, man, the third base coach asked for, so the offensive coach asked for a video review. So I'm asking myself this question. I'm not, first of all, I have never in my life been an umpire where we had video review yet.
Yeah.
Right. So if the weather holds, I'm going to on Sunday, which is fantastic. Can't wait. I'm very much looking forward to it, but I have zero personal experience with video review. The only thing I have is the book. Right. And then of course, any of the clarifications and discussions we've had with other umpires. Right. So looking at the book, the first thing I would say is that an umpire didn't make a decision. There was no ruling here.
Mm-hmm.
There was no call made that needs to be reviewed, right? So there's no ruling. This thing is about video review is to make sure that we, the umpires, get it right. The third base coach did not appeal that his own runner missed a bag. He can't, right? Only the defense can appeal to the missed bag.
Yes.
So there was no appeal. The third base coach says, boy, I might have messed up. I might have caused my runner to do something wrong.
Right.
I'm going to call for video review to see if I messed up. I don't think that's reviewable. In this case, I believe that it was granted in error until somebody else tells me otherwise. Somebody from the SUP, if they're listening, reach out and yell at me and say, David, make a correction because it's absolutely reviewable. And by the way, David, it's also the third base coach is allowed to request video review to see if he screwed up. Or she. I don't even know if it was a he or she. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to be sexist there. I don't remember. I don't think I knew which one it was. So anyway, I just think that runner's stuck at third.
But the one thing you mentioned that is on there is if no one was able to see the play.
Right.
So then the question becomes, let's assume that it was legal for that coach to ask that or to make the question. If the umpire said, golly, I don't know if third base was touched. It sounds like the rule book would allow them to go, but we have to go back to the very beginning, which says it's not appropriate for the person to request that anyway, right? So I feel like maybe had they not seen if the base was touched or not, the rule book would allow then for that, right? Let's assume it was the other way. Maybe if the defensive coach asked.
Yeah, if the defensive coach asked and an umpire said, oh, man, I wasn't looking.
Right.
I don't have any idea. Then I think a review could happen because we have an appeal, right? Now we have a dead ball appeal to say, hey, I think she missed that base. You weren't even looking,
right,
Blue. You know, there wasn't anybody watching at all.
You could probably say it nicely. You could say, I would like to initiate a video review for player missing the base as I believe it may not have been.
Believe it may not have been covered because, there was activity.
Yeah. I would try to use the language from the book so that no one tossed me.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. Good luck. You wouldn't get tossed for that, I don't think. But anyway, so I don't think it was reviewable. I don't think video review should be called for in that case. It definitely shouldn't have been granted. And then if it was, so then it was, and they left the field and did the video review. They come back. They saw that she touched all of the bases and everything. I think you got to book the run.
Yep.
Because you let the review happen at that point.
Right.
Now, if the other team could probably protest that and say, you shouldn't have reviewed it. She should have been stuck at third base.
What happens if the defensive coach asks for a video review of the video review, whether or not the video review is allowed, and we should nullify all testimony?
We're going to not talk about that one, Pete. Yeah, we already have admitted our ignorance in this area right here, but still fun to kind of talk about.
Right.
And definitely, if we get clarification on either anything from this week or the last episode, we'll definitely be putting that information. We'll append it onto the episode and then talk about it in a future one as well.
Yeah, if the episode is released by that point, you can always check umpiringfastpitch.softball.com or on the Facebook page, search Umpiring Fast Pitch Softball. You can, they'll be in the comments. A lot of times, anything like that, if there's addendums, if we mention visual aids, you can find those things there usually.
Yep. Okay, I have another one. This one happened to me in a game. I said I actually posted, which is very rare for me to post, but I posted in the NFHS Fast Pitch Softball Umpires group, and I probably won't again because I still got some umpires coming at me, to say, do you even read your book? Like, yeah, I read it all the time. I was posting this so that we could talk about it, and other people might be able to learn, but
right.
I got added, so, probably going to not post in those groups anymore. Maybe answer a question here or there, but I'm not going to start scenarios and whatnot. We'll leave that to others. But this one happened to me on the field, actually after the game or in between innings. I did have an opportunity to talk to my partner about it. But here's the scenario. We have another suicide squeeze going on. And so the runner is off with the pitch and very fast. And the bunter is right-handed, so not a lefty bunter.
Mm-hmm.
So the bunter is right-handed. They square to bunt. They put the bunt down. The bunt goes pretty much straight in front of the pitcher's, straight in front of the home plate toward the pitcher's plate. And the catcher ends up running out and fielding the ball. Mm-hmm. The runner is not super fast. The batter runner is not super fast. The runner from third is lightning fast. So the runner from third crosses the plate about the same time that the catcher throws the ball toward first base.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we've got the runner has crossed the plate and the batter runner is running in fair territory and gets hit in the back shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
By the pitch, or I'm sorry, by the throw, mm-hmm. from the catcher. And so I immediately call dead ball. Mm-hmm. I have runner's lane violation.
Yes.
Right. So, and why is it a runner's lane violation, Pete?
The last foot down was in fair territory and the throw was coming from where it was coming from.
Yep. And so what did she interfere with then with that? The catch, right?
Yeah, I said the first baseman's ability to catch the ball.
Yeah, the first baseman's ability to catch the ball. Said it that way because that's how the book goes. And the only thing that the runner's lane is for. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a second. Because the big question then is, does the run count?
Yes, I understand. I'm not saying yes to your question. Yes, that is the question.
Yes, that is the question. And so what do you think,
Pete? So my thoughts are, I don't know how you ruled in the moment. You know, like you said, you were bringing this for discussion because it's a cool scenario. And whether or not you did the right thing in the moment, this is about, hey, here's one of those weird things, and let's yep. all learn from junk that happens to David. So in this case, to me, the run does not score. Well, hold on, wait, question. How many outs were there?
Aha, that's a very good question. Less than two.
Okay, now I got to think harder. Because I was thinking right away, I was about to start talking and say, because if there's two outs, since the player did not reach first base safely, timing does not matter. She could score 13 days before. If the runner gets out, then
that's right.
The batter runner gets out, then the run does not score. Now that that's happened, we have runner's lane violation, which is an immediate dead ball. And even though the run scored, the runner crossed the plate. I mean, I think we don't score the run because of that. And so now the other question is, what do we do with that runner?
All right, that's a good one. So let me help you with your train of thought.
Yeah,
what is the effect of interference?
I mean, so it's out. So the batter runner is out.
Batter runner is out. And yes. What happens to the other runners?
And so they go, so that's what I'm thinking. So we end up with, they go back to the, yeah, okay. So at a minimum, there I was going to put the person back. What I was thinking was whether or not they were out. That's the only thing I was debating about. At a minimum, I know for a fact, the best thing that can happen to her is that she has to go back to the base she occupied at the time of the pitch.
It's the base last touched at the time of the interference.
Is it?
It is.
Oh, is that a difference between the two of the sanctions, or is that is that everywhere?
They're all the same.
Hi, everyone. Pete from the future here. I'm coming to you from the editing booth. And we actually got a correction email from a listener named Carlos from Hawaii, who pointed out that the rule, as David just explained it, is not the same in all sanctions. So David, in this case, when I was asking and listening, I actually thought he was describing a college game, and I think from Carlos's feedback, he may have thought that as well. So if any listeners thought he was talking about college, he was actually umpiring a high school game when it happened. That's why he mentioned that he posted inside the NFHS forum on Facebook, so he was already putting himself in the right context. I just did not follow along correctly. But the rule in high school says here that if the batter runner runs outside the 3-foot lane and in the judgment of the umpire interferes with the fielder taking the throw at first, so you got that. And then down here, penalty, the ball is dead and the runners must return to the last base touched at the time of the interference. So David was right as he described it. But where he was wrong is he mentioned that when I asked, is this the same across sanctions? And he said, yes. But as Carlos pointed out to us in the NCAA rules 1217.152, the batter runner may not run outside the runner's lane and in the umpire's judgment interfere with the fielder taking a throw to make a play at first base. Exception, the batter runner may run outside of the lane for some various reasons, but the penalty there says, page 128 of the NCAA rule book, effect 1217.13 through 1217.16, the ball is dead, the batter runner is out, and each base runner not put out prior to the interference must return to the last base occupied at the time of the pitch. So there is that difference, and we just wanted to clear that up and give a shout out to Carlos for calling us on it. Back to the episode.
Yep. Okay. It's just because of the speed of runners, it just doesn't usually work that way.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay.
So yes, the batter runner is out for interference, or actually running lane violation, interfering with the first base player's ability to catch the ball.
Mm-hmm.
She is out, and all other runners return to the base last touched at the time of the interference.
So in this case, she returns to home plate.
That's right.
Which allows her to go back to the bench where she was.
Yep. Head to the bench. Yep.
So, yeah. So then you're saying the run does score is where we're all getting at this.
Yep. Run scores as long as there was less than two outs. Because as you properly pointed out, Pete, if it's the third out, she didn't reach first. So it's a force out and no time. It's not a timing play. It's so somebody's going to come at me.
Yeah. It's not a force out.
Yeah. But the effect is the same of a force out. She didn't reach first. So it's not a timing play. So. Yeah, so that one was fun. And then let's see. Another umpire sent me a text and said, "Hey, I've got one for you." And he sent a picture, and it was a picture from like a high plate view, and you could see most of the field. And what you could see was the left fielder was straddling the fair foul line.
Yeah. Oh, you sent this to me.
Yeah, I sent that to you too. And this umpire said, "I'm just going to tell it. It's Frosty. It was Frosty. Frosty, you did it." It was Frosty's fault. Frosty sent me the picture.
Were they straddling? I thought they were completely over the line.
Oh, could be.
Yeah, but I think they were. Okay. I'm 99% sure they were completely over the line.
Okay. I think it's the same either way. But I'm pretty sure I surprised Frosty when he said, "What, if anything, do you see here? And if you see something, what do you have?" And I immediately texted him. As soon as I saw it, I texted him right back and said, "Illegal pitch." And so
from the picture, I think they're completely in foul territory.
Okay. Yep. So illegal pitch. And then, you know, I think I impressed him that it was quick. And I'm like, well, I'm a rules geek. So one of those things. So all of the players except for the catcher must be positioned in fair territory.
Yeah. And so in NFHS, which I don't know NCAA rules, but because I don't work NCAA. But in the NFH rules, if you look at rule 6-3, 6-2, I think article 9. I only snippeted the book here, but the rule I'm reading says, "The pitcher shall not deliver a pitch until all defensive players are positioned in fair territory, except the catcher, who must be in the catcher's box." So if the pitcher delivers a pitch when that is not true, then that's an illegal pitch. But also here, it says that the pitcher shall not even be considered, not even, I said even, the pitcher shall not be considered to be in the pitching position unless the catcher is within the lines of the catcher's box in position to receive the pitch. And, oh, actually, I didn't have a catcher. Why did I even include? I don't know what I'm doing there. I thought it was going to also include about the players. Oh, that was the problem. I was telling you that I expected to see it here in the rule book, and it took me a long time to find what I wanted because I expected it to be. I expected for that part to say the catcher is in the catcher's box and all fielders are. So the pitcher is not, you know, the pitcher is not considered to be in the pitching position until the catcher is within the lines of the box. And I thought it would say, and all fielders are in fair territory, all other fielders are in fair territory, and not realizing that in the next section, it would actually address the fielders. So that's the part where I came in. But yeah, regardless, because they're not supposed to be allowed to deliver that pitch, and then they do, that's an illegal pitch.
Yep,
that's right. And the rule book does say that that's the outcome.
Yep, for sure. And that same thing is true also in the NCAA, NC2A. It's 6.6.3 for anybody who's looking for it. It's infielders and outfielders. All infielders and outfielders must be in fair territory from the time of the pitch. From the time the pitcher steps on the pitcher's plate until the pitch is released. If a fielder's feet are touching the line or are in fair territory, they are considered in the field of play. So the effect, if they're not, illegal pitch. So, and then of course, for those listening who don't know what the effect of an illegal pitch is, it's the outcome of the pitch or a ball on the batter, and that's the offense's choice.
And right? Only if a runner does not reach base safely.
Correct.
Yeah, so if they hit a single and the person and the umpire says, or the coach says, "You know what? Girl's a big hitter. I think she could get better than a single. I'd rather take the ball and put her back up to bat." Nah, dog. You don't even get that choice.
You don't get to pick that in the high school rules, right? That's funny. Okay, I think we've got one more. That's going to be really, really quick because Pete's giving me the cut it off, Trout. You're done. You talk too much. This one's really quick, though, and it is about the application of, in the NCAA, the application of clearly out. So I was reviewing a video from an umpire that said, "Hey, you know, what do you have here? Watch this thing." And, excuse me, what we had was a catcher who had set up in a position that would have been obstruction, you know, so anything blocking the leading edge of the plate or base from where the runner is coming is automatically obstruction, right? Mm-hmm. If you set up wrong. Right. The only thing that cancels that is if you have a clearly out. So in this particular clip, the catcher sets up wrong. I've got obstruction just about, right? And then all of a sudden, here comes the ball, and the catcher takes a step forward and goes up and touches the runner coming who wasn't in a position to even start a slide. They were, you know, it's like, oh yeah, no, you're clearly out. So there is no obstruction anymore. So obstruction gets kind of canceled because the runner was clearly out. And I think that, and that was the call on the field, I believe. And so job well done, of course, in my opinion, anyway.
And just a scenario, just so people are aware.
Yeah,
it's one of those things that, and that's one of those, especially as I feel like college softball gets really, the viewership goes way up as the College World Series comes in. And, you know, when this comes out, we'll still be a little bit ahead of that. But that's one of the things that I hear just the dads talking about in the stands during the, you know, the late spring and early summer months of things that happened. And, oh, that was obstruction. That should have been obstruction. And they don't know. That's the one rule. Like, no one, especially the casuals, don't seem to understand at all. And so it's one of those things that let's get that and let's understand what the rule book does say. And let's use that rule book language. So if you're defending yourself against, you know, a dad coach as you're working something and, you know, it's the coach doesn't, maybe not familiar with the rules, and they come and say that's obstruction. She clearly was set up blocking the leading edge of the plate. And your response is, well, the player was clearly out, which nullifies the obstruction. And then,
yep. So she sure was, coach.
Yeah.
However, the rest of the rule says, you know, yeah, exactly. And it's not only just dad coaches too, Pete. And unfortunately, and I'm going to add a couple, but not by name. If you're just watching on, you know, ESPN Plus, you're watching some of these streaming games and the announcers are on there. A lot of the announcers, they don't understand either. So
yeah,
the rule book is big, you know, it's 180 pages or so. So it's a lot to know, and the umpires have to know it and coaches should know it, but it's the umpires that have to know it. So anyway, that's all we have for you today. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, that's it. Until next time.